to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
The New Pornographers, they're probably, I don't know, kind of my favorite band in the universe, frequently, I suppose. With Testament to Youth from their first album, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? From Electric Version, that was their second album. Their most recent record, Brill Bruisers, came out last year and is magnificent. If you like complicated, multifaceted rock and roll, which not everybody does, which is, that's cool, that's fine. I like music that is confusing to me. This is Mick, by the way, and you're listening to Trivial Thursdays here on WRFL Lexington. It's 18 after 7 in the morning. Good morning to you. Happy to have you along. This AM, as always, it's my great pleasure to host Trivial Thursdays every week and spend some time talking with people who are doing cool things in Lexington, cool things that make Lexington a better and more interesting place. And so, let's see. Back there, we heard some music also. My colleague, Patrick, who is, welcome back, Patrick. Patrick did a show when he was in school here and has come back to take a gig at UK. And so Patrick has returned to the airwaves. And he played something by The Associates, which was the piece of music with an extremely peculiar singer, I have to say. And of course, inspired me to be super retro and play something by The Association. So we heard Cherish there from The Association. You know, I think I've maybe sort of saw it on this before, but I just want to say one time, music's for everybody, right? One of the reasons you're probably listening to WRFL is because you have a enduring fondness, possibly nerd-level fondness, for all kinds of different music. And the great thing about recorded music is it kind of lasts forever until the zombie apocalypse, I suppose. So one time this guy, I was at the state fair, as I was not too long ago, and they were doing the horse show, and this guy was playing the organ accompaniment music to the horse show, which is, you know, as gigs go, it could drive you to drink. I'm not sure. It seemed as though he maybe had been. And he was playing this song, and his organ was like, you know, and I was like, I sort of know that song, but I can't quite place it. So I went over to talk to the guy, and I was like, you know, just cheerful, curious about music. And I was like, what was that song you were playing just then? And he looked at me with angry eyes, and he was like, ah, you're too young. Which, you know, I'd heard the song, so I wasn't too young, and I wasn't even young. So anyway, this is my long-winded way of telling you, dear listener, to love whatever music it is that you love. You can do that. It's totally fine. For instance, I'm going to play a song for you that I love. Earth, Wind, and Fire there from their album. Oh, I don't know. It doesn't matter what album that's from. It's its own milieu, if I can use that word, and I'm not sure that I can. September, of course, and it's September 1st, so, you know, I made like a personal note to myself to make sure that I played September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. This is Mick, you're listening to Trivial Thursdays. I'm mentioning that, you know, a minute ago I played the New Pornographers, and Dan Bejar was... He's one of two guys that tends to sing for the New Pornographers. Several people sing for the band. But Dan Bejar has kind of the quirkier voice and also tours solo and under the name Destroyer. And he's coming to Lexington. So that's what I meant to mention. On October 5th, Dan Bejar performing as Destroyer is playing at the Burl, which is a new joint downtown in the Distillery District. So I'm kind of excited about that. I don't really understand. On the Burl's page, it says Destroyer (solo). So I don't know. That's Dan Bejar's solo band anyway. I don't know if that what that means exactly. Maybe it just means Dan Bejar's playing. But it's something to take note of if you're fond of that strange man and his strange voice and his strange habits, such as only consenting to be in the new pornographers if he could always have one hand free so that he could have a beer in it, which supposedly what is one of his terms for being in the new pornographers. This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays. Good morning to you. Thanks for tuning in. It's always a great pleasure to be here. I'm excited about our show this week, this day, today, right now. And let's see. So a little later on in the show, by the way, we're Clean Power Planet's Dave Butler is going to be here. And Dave, hopefully, is going to reassure us all that solar energy is very much on the way because it's late. It's really late. And we need it bad. So Dave's been involved in solar energy projects for quite a number of years now and has a podcast called Clean Power Planet. So Dave's going to be coming around in just a little bit. And but I'm happy right now to be joined by a couple of the people from a place called the Parachute Factory. Sarah Brown and David Kring are here. Good morning, you guys. How you doing?
Good morning. Good.
Good morning.
Hello. Now, let me caution you about this question. So when I say, are you morning people, be careful, because if you're not, just remember that everybody else out there is.
Right.
So I don't know if it's early for you all or not. It's light outside. That's good, right? That's a plus.
I definitely get started early, not this early, but definitely right. I'm usually up by 8 or 7, but
all right, yeah,
not going this much.
Well, it takes a long time to pack a parachute. I mean, like, right. How many parachutes do you guys pack every day, would you say?
Just about 5. Okay. That's all we can fit in.
So, let's see. Are you guys, Sarah, are you involved with UK at all? Do you guys have a history with UK at all? This is a UK student station, so.
Right. No, I went to Transylvania University and studied art and graduated in 09.
My wife did, too, and a number of other of my good friends. And so I have to ask, do you have your diploma with you?
No, to show it off. Yeah. It's actually collecting dust in a drawer. So, yeah.
Sarah, what about you? Are you from around these parts?
I am not. I'm from South Carolina, but I teach as an adjunct here at UK School of Visual Arts.
The last time I was in South Carolina, I was shocked by how hot it was.
Yeah.
It was the height of summer, but nonetheless.
It's like, it'll only be 100 degrees, but it's 100% humidity, so you're taking a shower every time you walk outside.
It's profound. It's a profound heat, I would call it. Yeah.
You are automatically a water person if you live in South Carolina. You don't have a choice.
So you took like just a couple of notches down by moving to Lexington, I think, in terms of humidity and heat.
Right.
But some significant notches, I think.
It was a lot. And I lived in Boston for a couple of years, and that was really nice. So now I'm just a pansy about any kind of heat and humidity in the South.
Well, good luck with that. I'm sort of the same way. I keep thinking, like, I'm going to move to Minneapolis because people always say it's cold, but because of global warming, I'm thinking it's a little less cold all the time. Really nice up there a lot of the time. I say this. I love Lexington. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
So you guys, I've seen your place downtown, the Parachute Factory, which is in an acute triangle. Am I right?
Right.
Yes.
It's on Bryan Avenue. It's kind of connected with the Kentucky for Kentucky building. Yeah.
It's a freaky. It's an odd shaped building. I mean, it's connected to. It's a very complicated, like if you saw it from above, it's a complicated shaped building, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, I say an acute, because you're in the acute triangle part of it, right? Mm-hmm. That where it,
yeah,
really narrow, pie slice.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So you walk in and the walls like open up so that you can see everything at once, which makes it kind of difficult to hang with like the triangle going out, but it's very nice. It's very enlightening.
Now, and you guys were... So you're also, if a certain type of people are looking for a certain kind of landmark, you're also adjacent to the wall, the infamous wall that was the mural by, what's his name? Odeith, right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Odeith had that incredible painting there that through pure accident, true, I'm not being the least bit sarcastic at all, because Griffin is a dear friend of mine through pure and strange accident, the mural was mostly whitewashed.
Right.
They left a little part on the bottom there.
Right.
And then let's all be really clear. Griffin Van Meter, who it kind of has helped with lots and lots of things, including you guys, I suspect, made things 100% right with Odeeth by getting him a commission to paint the Walking Dead characters on the side of a building in Cynthiana, which was, I went for that festival, and that was kind of pretty hilarious hoot. I hope they do that every year.
Yeah, they said they were going to start now just because the mayor just did not expect it.
Yeah. Oh, I know, yeah, and I'm not surprised they didn't expect it. Okay. Robert, the guys who created The Walking Dead, they don't have to come every year. They can just have that festival,
right?
And people will come to what is, in the simplest of terms, a zombie-themed street festival.
Right.
Get your zombie popcorn. Zombie whatever. So, but anyway, so you guys are down. So you guys are doing the Parachute Factory, which has been open for how long now?
We've been open since May.
Since May. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
And did you all, were you all acquainted prior to this? Or where did the, how did the idea of the Parachute Factory bring you all together?
So David is actually coming in with the cult show have coming up. So he has just recently been brought in as a curator for that show. And the rest of us were stumbling around trying to find an exhibition space at last minute.
Okay.
And Griffin offered us the little triangular space. And he was like, you can have it, but there's all this stuff in there, and you have to get it out. Like, you can put it here, but you have to move it all. So we had a room full of things and moved it, and we decided we liked it, and he offered to let us use it at a really, really awesome rate. So he is doing us a huge favor. Mm-hmm. So we just ran with it, and we don't know what we're doing at all.
Excellent.
That's what we've learned.
Fantastic. So am I clear enough that you at least you, Sarah, mm-hmm. and maybe you too, David, are the organizer of the Parachute Factory space, or is it this art show in particular that you all are?
I'm the organizer of the art show
with
two other people.
Right, okay.
And Colleen Newcomb and Todd Hertzberg.
Okay.
And, of course, knew Sarah just from the art community, and once we heard about her working with this space, we were super excited to have a home for this show.
And then Sarah, so you're sort of steering the ship for the entity called the Parachute Factory.
Okay. There are four of us that are doing it. And so Stevie Morrison is our community events director. And then Ellen McCann, who is a UK graduate, is our registrar. And then Greg Lamer helps us out. And I'm the gallery director.
Okay.
So it's four of us.
So what was your... you mentioned a little bit that you had struggled with finding a gallery space,
mm-hmm.
and you were looking for a gallery space because talk about your experience, like looking for a gallery space or why you were looking for one landscape of galleries in Lexington.
The landscape of galleries in Lexington is really nice, mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of them compared to other towns that are of a similar size that have a large university in them. But the ones that are more like artist run and informal in a sense, are kind of harder to like not get into, but to be able to have your exhibition open. Like, they don't hold open hours. It's not run like a gallery, but it's an exhibition space for like pop-up events.
Right.
So there was a void there for like an artist-run space that tries to present itself as a professional gallery. I wouldn't say that we're achieving at that yet.
That's your aim.
But that was our aim. And that's what we wanted. We wanted something that was accessible and had like low commission rates and was easy for artists like David himself to be like, we have this awesome show we're putting together, but we need a space.
Right.
And you can do it not completely last minute, but on a shorter term than some of the more established galleries in Lexington that book a year out.
So if part of what I hear you saying is that it's tricky to keep, like a lot of times when people have these sort of community galleries, their exhibition spaces, the people that run them tend to have day jobs kind of, and that they kind of maybe don't tend to be open during just normal daylight hours.
Right.
And you guys are sort of pushing against that and trying to move in that direction to have it.
Yes, we are. We have open hours, but they're after work because we all four of us do have day jobs.
Right.
We have to pay the bills somehow.
Yeah.
But we have open hours Wednesdays through Fridays from 5 to 8 and Saturdays during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting there in terms of getting to that point. So.
Well, it sounds like you know what you're doing a little bit more than you claim. Or at least you're pretending well.
That's all that matters, right?
Had you ever thought of yourself as possibly being a gallery operator at any point?
No, not at all. I was actually really against it when I graduated graduate school. I was like, well, if I get into the administrative side of a gallery, then I'm never going to show in the gallery.
Okay.
And I ended up falling into that place to be able to give other artists a place to show.
Right.
And so it's a weird line, and I've kind of gone back on my word. And I'm
So you're a trained artist then?
Yes.
Okay. And David, you also?
Yes.
Right? Okay. And how did your paths cross in terms of this show? And then we'll get around to talking about the kind of fascinating show that you guys do have coming up.
Right.
How did
we probably just met through just going around to gallery hop and events at Lexington Art League.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably how we first met, I think.
Yeah.
And then from there, what she just described at the Parachute Factory, myself, Colleen, and Todd had been planning this show since last November.
Like, okay.
Let's put this show together. Let's figure out who we want in it. And then from there, figure out where to have it. And like she said, one of the main problems here in Lexington was that you either had to book a year in advance or you had to pick a space that could only be open for an opening and then a gallery hop, but it wouldn't have regular hours after that. And we wanted to give people the opportunity. So once we found out that Sarah had this space, we went and checked it out. We knew it was still very new. I went during one of the night markets, and it was just packed.
Yeah.
Because it's in that great space, and it'll be open for night market, which gives a whole new crowd of people who would never come to gallery hop even a chance to experience art and local artists and wonderful art that would be happening in this town.
Okay.
And that's what drew us to the space.
Okay. This is Trivial Thursdays. We're talking about the Parachute Factory with Sarah Brown and David Kring, who have, and David has an exhibit, is one of several people curating and putting up an exhibit at the new Lexington Gallery space downtown, which is on Bryan Avenue. And it's adjacent to Kentucky for Kentucky. It's that space, by the way, is a, not just, I'm not going to go back to the geometry of it, but like
it was like
Volunteers of America for a long time. It's a big sort of strange kind of warehousey sort of space, not necessarily just yours, but like Kentucky for Kentucky area and then Urals area. Mm-hmm. And then, so how much, I'm always fascinated with galleries, you know, how much, autonomy, Sarah, do you give the artists in terms of, I don't know if this isn't probably an installation exactly, but like, would you consider installations for your place, you know, where artists come in and go, I want to paint everything plaid or something like
that. As long as they paint it back white. Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see. So I want to, let's talk, I think I'm going to play a song real quick. Am I? I want for us to talk about the exhibit because it's really fascinating. So really, let's play. I'll tell you what, David, can you play a song and then we'll come back and talk about the exhibit because it's the maybe an exhibit's not the right word, show. But it's a really interesting concept, and there's a lot of tie-ins with music, sort of.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I'm going to let you pick a song, and we'll play that, and then we'll come back and talk about the kind of the idea behind the show and some of the details of it.
Sounds great. This is In Dreams by Roy Orbison.
Woo, fantastic. This is Trivial Thursdays. We will be back with Sarah and David from the Parachute Factory. Stick around. There's more to come. The original Man in Black, by the way. Mm-hmm. Before Johnny Cash, really.
Yeah.
Roy Orbison was always the Man in Black.
Yeah.
For strange, like, Roy Orbison had this, I don't know if it was real or mythical kind of tragedy associated with his life. Like, do you know if it was real or
yeah,
manufactured?
Yeah, it was a series of events where he lost his wife and his son, all very close to each other in separate events, but still just kept making music. And his, like, famous iconic concert, A Night in Black and White, where he played with, like, Tom Waits and Elvis Costello and Bruce Springsteen, he made that a month before he died.
Yeah.
So he was going right to the very end. So it was all these kind of things just kind of kept happening in his life that were terrible and tragic, but he was always just making this wonderful music.
Yeah. And the time frame was pretty big. I mean, the concert you're talking about happened within my old lifetime.
That was 86 or so, I want to say.
And so he had a big kind of resurgence with, he was in this sort of super group called the Traveling Wilburys. Right. But, like, in Dreams, I mean, that song is from, like, probably 1959 or something like that. He was very fortunate in the sense of, like, having a totally bona fide 100% career comeback. Like, people came to appreciate him even more, like, you know, fortunately, before he died. He had quite a reign. So, and a lot of people know, but a lot of people identify Roy Orbison for a variety of kind of quirky film reasons, which one of which I suspect I know, but I'll let you talk about it.
That song in particular comes from the movie Blue Velvet, directed by David Lynch, who was very inspired by 50s music. You can see it in a lot of his films, especially even like Twin Peaks. Just the whole vibe is very inspired by late 50s rock and roll. Blue Velvet has a lot of those iconic songs. Of course, the song Blue Velvet. And then, of course, the song In Dreams was performed very iconically, but it was, came off very creepy in the movie.
I was going to say disturbingly.
Disturbing, where they've just kidnapped this man. They brought him in, and I forget the actor's name, but he's lip-syncing to the song with a light lit on his face that he has painted pale white. And it's just, it's hysterical and creepy and makes you uncomfortable. And it's what
classic,
makes it wonderful.
It's classic David Lynch.
Yeah, exactly.
And it kind of burned an image and a sound into a lot of people's brains, partially by way of Roy Orbison.
Right.
That song, which is so, you know, it seems like such a sweet song, and then if you listen closely, there's, like, a lot of his songs, there's, like, a maudlin quality to it. So this brings us kind of in general to the theme of the show, which is called, the show's called what?
Just Cult.
Cult, that's right. And so you all had this idea, which, I mean, I don't know, the word mashup comes to mind a little bit, but I'll let you explain the idea behind taking certain inspirations and turning one form of art maybe into another form of art.
Right.
That'd be right.
Cult films typically are, like, you know, movies that did not do good in the box office but took on another life from fans. And a lot of them are considered midnight movies or art films or just films that were just extremely weird. But after time, they started just picking up more and more fans. Two of the best examples, actually, are if you think of Rocky Horror Picture Show and The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Weren't big successes in the theaters and box office, but all over the United States, there are constant midnight showings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Even, like, at the Kentucky Theater here, they're doing it, like, every month. And
that's been going on for decades,
right,
by the way.
Yeah. And even when I started going to college, so yeah, like, even before that, I know that they've been doing that. And it's one of those things that people quote the lines, people know the lyrics from it, people dress up in costume for it. And that's sometimes one of the kind of goals for a, a cult movie is if you can quote the lines and dress up as one of your favorite characters from it, that usually sometimes makes it a good cult film also. And Big Lebowski, we here in Kentucky started the Lebowski Fest, which went worldwide, United States-wide, and out to L.A. and Chicago and New York now. And it all started in Louisville, so that's pretty cool, too.
Absolutely, yeah. So the funny thing about like what you're calling cult movies, I guess, is like, I don't know, do you think that anyone ever sets out to make a cult movie, or is it something that...
You almost got to think David Lynch did, but no.
Exclude David Lynch.
Right, exactly. Outside of that, no, I think people are typically just making films that other people aren't making. It's, you know... you can also think of the Coen brothers and Wes Anderson, and a lot of their early films are considered cult because they made the films they wanted to make and were trying out new practices and incorporating new ways to look at film. And like David Lynch, brought in a lot of music to help push the film along and make it very iconic and use very iconic scenes.
Right. So how does this pertain to like a gallery art show or a you yourself are what's your do you have a medium of preference?
Yeah, I'm a ceramic artist, so I do figurative sculptures. I also make pottery as well.
Okay.
So I've created a giant bust of Divine, who is a drag queen from the 70s and 80s that is most associated with John Waters, films like Pink Flamingo. I'm doing interpretation of her from the movie Female Trouble. Very odd film.
Well, Divine has, you know, Lexington ties. I know, for sure. I absolutely know. Yeah. Divine was friends with the people who operated Cafe Element OP, which was an iconic and gender and boundary breaking club in downtown Lexington. And Divine made a couple of fabled visits here to perform at the behest of Bradley Picklesheimer, at the behest of Bob Morgan. So if you ever want to talk, if you ever want to talk to Vine, talk to Bob Morgan.
That's awesome.
So this is an interesting, so you're a sculptor.
Right.
And you found a way to channel your love of a particular movie, in this case, Pink Flamingos, one of the only movies I've ever walked out of, by the way.
Yeah.
Which, and I'm not judging the movie. Just saying, so the only movies I've ever, I had to walk out of it.
Right. It's a hard one to watch. It's a long
There's some
too.
Parts in it where you're just like, I gotta go.
Right.
But I think that's John Waters' specialty. I love John Waters. Exactly. He's incredible.
He definitely talks on the idea of filth a lot and how it can be an art form. So disturbing delusional personalities is one of his specialties.
So let's see. So I can't wait to see your sculpture, by the way. It's got to be large, I'm thinking. Maybe not. I'm not sure.
It's about 2 feet in height, and it's mounted on the wall, almost like you would mount an animal that,
How do you, when does the show open, by the way?
The show opens tonight.
Tonight, okay.
Yeah.
The opening for Cult is tonight. Yeah, this is at the Parachute Factory.
Right.
I can't wait to see this stuff. Tell me about some of your favorites or how you all collected submissions for this or how did you curate the show?
For the most part, we came up with the idea, and then we had had a previous show that I was a part of just based on video games that I created, like a little mini bust of Mario and Luigi in my style.
Okay.
But from there, we just saw such a great response that we started thinking about a new theme. And we thought, what's kind of universal? What's going to be something that is going to bring someone in? And we started talking about just certain films and how we liked Coen Brothers films and how we liked Big Lebowski. And someone, Todd, mentioned how he really liked Wes Anderson films. And we were like, why don't we just do cult in general? And that gives just a broad spectrum of what people can pick from. From there, we started just figuring out who in Lexington would fit this. We thought of Brian and Sarah Turner, Cricket Press, who are also big cult movie fans.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we wanted to bring them in. And then we thought some of the other artists, Drone X, who did
whose name shall not be spoken.
Right.
I don't know. I've been trying to. Why didn't you bring Drone X? I've been trying to get him to come on my show forever.
Oh,
he's even said that he would.
Yeah, he's quiet and he'll talk to you, but it's got to be on his terms.
I know. Drone X, who's a street artist,
I suppose you'd say, right.
Who's responsible for a particularly iconic what do they call the thing?
It's just called the Drone X.
The Drone X.
Yeah,
it's like this capsule shaped thing with wings and
right.
Looks sort of like a rocket.
Yeah, it's been told it's a pig at one point. Yeah.
And it gets iterated into all kinds of things.
And he'll put that into a lot of different cult things. But when he usually takes on one of these show assignments, he has been creating large sculptures of everyday objects, and he just times them by, like, 100. The piece he did for this is a crushed PBR can, and it's a can actually that looks like it came from the 80s, and that's from Blue Velvet, from a line that I can't repeat for language, but talks about go out to a bar and he's like, what do you have? I'm gonna have Heineken, don't drink that, with some explicit language, have a PBR. so that's what that's from.
So in this case, Stronex is, because I may have missed out on some of his more recent stuff, this is like
it's a three-dimensional sculpture that looks extremely realistic. It's
fantastic.
Like, yeah.
So it's easy to be inspired by Blue Velvet. Lots of people are.
Right.
I'm just going to tease you a little bit. We're setting the bar a little bit low here because Blue Velvet's Blue Velvet. Like, what are some of the other things that people will see in the opening of the show?
Yeah.
You mentioned Pink Flamingos, of course, too.
Mine's actually Female Trouble, which is the second film.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you say Female Trouble?
Yes.
Pink Flamingos?
But
sorry.
It's overall just a celebration of divine.
Which is not uncommon in those films.
So that would be mine. There's Donnie Darko. There is Repo Man, which has become very popular here in Lexington because of the hair-eating Stanton Festival.
Mm-hmm.
There's Twin Peaks, to have another David Lynch film in there. What are some of the other ones?
There's a Jean-Luc Godard based piece, which is like French cult film. And then who else is there?
Yeah, I was gonna say like so.
There's Psycho.
Can like European Hitchcock. European films be cult films? Because aren't they just weird just because they're European?
Right.
Yeah.
But they take on a cult like following here in America.
Right.
Where over there they're just films.
That's
here,
what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. It's not necessarily whether a film is just kind of weird or obtuse, but it has to do with whether or not people are sort of magnetized to it
the following
over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's the Godard film then? Because I probably haven't seen it, but I'm curious.
I'm not sure of the name.
You know?
I wasn't aware of that one, personally.
I keep trying to figure out.
I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Okay. No. I'll just keep trying to look for a Godard film to watch, because I don't know. I'm afraid.
Yeah. Right.
So again, back to the artists that participated, you mentioned a few, but like today, how many of them approached you or some of the organizers and said, hey, I've got this idea. Here's something I want to think. Do you think this would be good? Or do they not? They're just like, no, I'll bring it. I'll just bring it.
That's what it was. We didn't see the art until it came in on Monday or Tuesday, whenever we were collecting the art. But we have so much faith in these, artists. John Lackey did a wonderful piece for Harold and Maude, and it's just like, everybody knows John Lackey. You know he's going to get it done, even if it comes kind of wet. It's going to get there. you don't have to worry about that.
How much time did these people have to work on this stuff? Because, Sarah, you were talking about the benefits of kind of a shorter turnaround time for booking gallery space, but that feeds back into, artists either needing a lot of time to get stuff done, or probably in many cases being deeply committed procrastinators.
Right.
Who just don't sleep for days before the thing.
I think we notified some of the people for sure, like around February, and we're like, hey, heads up, we're going to do this cult show for sure. Go ahead and just maybe start thinking about what film you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think once we had the space booked, that was about 3 or 4 months ago, and we were like, all right, make it, get it done. I know I started my sculpture in June, and it came out of the kiln, finished on Saturday. So,
were there any subtleties of Divine where you're like, God, I'm having trouble capturing her giant bosom, or I don't know what, yet. Like it, anything where you're like, how do I get the eyebrows just right?
I had to, the main thing, the eyebrows were easy. It's just, that sculpted brow she has. So I didn't even need to put eyebrows besides the painted on there. But one thing I did do that, you know, you get the sculpture to where you want it, and you're like, there's something missing. And it was the eyelashes. So I had to go onto Amazon and just type in drag queen eyelashes.
Okay.
And order those Amazon Prime to try to get them within a week to super glue them over the eyes. And once those got on, it was like, yep, that's Divine.
Let's see. So, and well, that begs this kind of funny question. Like, I've been down at Thoroughbred Park occasionally, which is always like seeing a park name seem obvious, but then sometimes like Triangle Park, it's not a triangle, right. It's a pie shape.
Right.
But anyway, never mind. Thoroughbred Park, where they have the horse sculptures and the jockeys riding the horses, and they're wildly detailed. Like if you go up really, really close, it looks like somebody's been the subject of dark magic, really. like there's a live human in there going, let me out.
Right.
So you're saying you ordered eyelashes.
Yeah.
So is your Divine sculpture, is it, when I say touchable, I don't mean people should touch it, but like, is it cast or is it kind of,
it's sculpted.
What's the word used for this sort of, like, if it's a sculpture, but it's not all cast, if
hand
you will.
Built.
Yeah. Hand built.
Okay.
It's all hand built. And it is definitely doesn't have a realistic view. Like the eyes come off as realistic, but the way I treat the surface, it looks off, like flaked off paint off like an old rusted door is kind of how I treat a lot of my sculptures. So it works with the story of...
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Female troubles where she had acid thrown on her face. So she has a very crusted face,
okay,
which works for my piece.
Let's, hey, we've just got a few minutes left, but let's, this is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, by the way. WRFL Lexington here. Thanks for tuning in. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm your host, Mick, of course, every week here with, a variety of, fabulous Lexingtonians who are doing cool things in the community, whether it's art or music or, community events or, just making Lexington a neater place. And I'm here with Sarah Brown and David Kring of, the upcoming Parachute Factory show called Cult. And a little bit later in the show, David Butler is going to be here from Clean Power Planet. We're going to talk some about solar energy. And again, thanks to you for tuning in. Well, you guys, what I'd like to, let's play another song. Because, again, I love this sort of intersection of film and music and visual art, which is kind of the crossroads of the cult show, which opens tonight. And so let's play one more song and come back and finish up a little bit and let people know the when and the where and how they can find out more too.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you got? Now, you rattled off a playlist to me, which I really appreciated you bringing in, David, and like everything on it. I was like, that's great.
Right. Yeah. this next one also takes on a very iconic scene in the movie Pulp Fiction. It's You Never Can Tell by Chuck Berry.
Okay. Chuck Berry there. A man who had peculiar peccadillos of his own, actually, but one of the fathers of rock and roll. That was what's it called? Teenage Wedding?
You Never Can Tell.
You Never Can Tell, that's right. And that song, how does that fit into to the cult show that you guys are doing at the Parachute Factory?
That is a very iconic scene in the movie Pulp Fiction, mm-hmm. Done by Quentin Tarantino, where John Travolta and Uma Thurman are at this old 50s bar, which kind of brings it back. You know, cult films love the 50s, uh-huh. like 50s of rock and roll. She asks him to dance, and he's supposed to just kind of be a bodyguard and just be watching her for the night. And they wind up dancing. This is, I think it's a dance off, is actually what it's a dance
off. It is. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a twist off, maybe, or
right,
something?
That's what it is. Uh-huh. And so, very iconic scene where both of them are dancing and kind of brings John Travolta back to dancing, because that's what he was known for early in his career with Saturday Night Fever and Grease and everything, known for being a dancer, and he hadn't done it for years. And Quentin Tarantino kind of brought him back and put him in this state of where he gets to dance again in a movie, and a very iconic scene.
Yeah.
And so we do have a piece.
He just
of
turns
Pulp
it.
Fiction.
He just turns that. I mean, Quentin Tarantino just kind of turned the whole. He turned everything inside out with that kind of. I mean, the song is this kind of squeaky clean song. Right. John Travolta was really. I mean, you know, washed up. He was washed right. up at that point, and right. Quentin Tarantino had the strange. At the time, I mean, it's easy to look back and think, oh, that's great. But, like, at the time, to cast John Travolta, just,
yeah,
I'm sure lots of people were like, what?
Yeah.
And then to have him dance.
Right.
That crazy, like, kind of, isn't that where they do the sort of Batman dance, sort of?
Yeah, they do, yeah, the eyes where they.
I call it the Batman dance for some reason. I'm not sure, but with, like, yeah, peace signs with your fingers for those in the radio audience using, like, making peace signs and dragging them across your eyes sideways.
The fish swim. Right.
So, like, yeah, so that seems like a natural touch point. Pulp mm-hmm. Fiction is so full of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like you said, and then there's the 50s again.
Right. And that's even what we were telling some of the people when you described this show that aren't necessarily familiar with what a cult film would be. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just throw out, well, have you ever seen Pulp Fiction? Yes, I've seen Pulp Fiction. Well, have you seen Inglourious Bastards by Tarantino? Like, yes, well, that's not a cult film. You
right.
know, it's kind of big box office film that did very well and was nominated for, like, Oscars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see, like, the duality of his films and how there's little nuances of what makes something a cult film.
Right. Yeah, Raising Arizona.
Raising
I think
Arizona,
of, or
Coen
for
Brothers.
Me personally, Barton Fink more. But
yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, the Coen Brothers have had much, much more right. famous movies.
Right.
But there's a kind of a diehard following. Although, really, the ultimate one, like you said, is probably The Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski, definitely.
But for me, it's Barton Fink.
Right.
Which also takes, you know, like when you take a great, like John Goodman, you know, mm-hmm. who I thought of as nothing but like. The husband on Roseanne, right. you know, he's just, and after that movie, I was like, oh my God, John Goodman is a
yeah.
god.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how these movies often take certain actors, mm-hmm. unlikely actors, and elevate mm-hmm. them to, forgive yeah. me, but cult-like status.
Yes, yeah, there's several people that would be considered like iconic cult film actors. I would say, John Goodman's definitely one of them because of the Coen Brothers, just like some of the Wes Anderson people, like Bill Murray.
Totally.
You know, people have always known Bill Murray, but Bill Murray's become a cult figure in general, where he has just such a following with his image and just his overall being that he can just say anything and it's hysterical or amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I'm here with David Kring and Sarah Brown. Of the Parachute Factory and the show Cult, which opens tonight at 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it so? This is Sarah. This is the latest in the offerings at the Parachute Factory.
Yes, it is.
Which is downtown at Bryan and Limestone, right at the railroad tracks, really.
Right.
Yes.
Correct.
Is it on the right or the wrong side of the tracks? Would you say?
It's on the wrong side of the tracks for tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, kicks off at 6. All these, all this mm-hmm. art will be on display that's based on cult movies.
Mm-hmm.
What are you? Have you seen anything that? Do you have any secrets to share? Any kind of thing that you're particularly looking forward to? Either people seeing, or you seeing yourself, or. Or what have you, after the work that you've put into kind of curating this?
Right. I'm excited to see the reaction to Drone Exodus piece in general, where it's a giant PBR can crushed, and it'll be laying on its side, just to see something so familiar to so many people around the Lexington. To see the reaction to that will definitely be great. And also, Cricket Press's pieces are Donnie Darko and also Scanners, very two iconic cult films, and to see how people get excited for those are one I'm excited about. David Wisher, did I say that last name right?
Yeah.
Wisher did a little looped video which has a scene from Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Teen Wolf in it, kind of looped, and he's done it in a cartoon style. And I'll be excited to see people just kind of standing in front of that and watching it over and over.
That is, I'm glad you mentioned Pee-wee Herman, because he should definitely be included. He's just almost a living cult figure.
Yes. Kind of. Especially with that Tim Burton film of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which was, I think, Tim Burton's first film? Am I not mistaken? I might be mistaken about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I love it.
But definitely Pee-wee's first film, where he was known as just this child actor who did like a daytime television show for kids, and to put him in where it still has that same kind of feel as it's for children, but it's definitely for adults. It's just this oddball of a film.
Are you talking about Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Yeah, yeah. Has creepy moments.
My 4-year-old daughter adores it.
Yeah.
And it's all, and it, like you said, it's adults. There's not really children in it, but there's the weirdest and maybe most discomforting thing in the universe is kind of adults acting like children.
Right. Yeah. I know you are,
it's sort of a magic formula.
Like one of the main things.
I hope that we'll see. So Pee-wee's represented in this, in this video loop thing.
Yeah.
Cool, Sarah. What are you looking forward to? You've been hard at work, trying to pull off the Parachute Factory here. It's happening.
I'm most excited about having a bunch of different kinds of art forms in a show. Mm-hmm. We've shown a lot of prints up until this point, but tonight we'll open with sculptures and paintings and ceramic wall pieces and video and glass, like enamel stained glass pieces. Mm-hmm. We have like really broad showing of all of the different forms, which is really exciting.
Fantastic.
As an organizer to get to that point.
So how long will the show, how long will people, so they can come tonight, and that's probably a good idea.
Yes.
And the show, will it stay up for a while? What's the deal with that? Or
yes. So we'll be open again tomorrow night for Night Market, and then it will be open through the 17th of September.
Okay.
And that includes a gallery hop on the 16th of September from 5 to 8.
And the Night Market's especially handy for you guys, as you mentioned, because if you're going to the Night Market and you're not sure where the Parachute Factory is, well you're there.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's right there. So that helps a lot of people kind of know where it is too. Cool. Well, hey, thanks for coming and talking to you guys. Sounds like a great show. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's see. Also, you guys do have an after party. Is that right? Is that something you want to mention?
Right. We're going to be at Al's Bar, and the Lexington Film League is presenting the old 1932 film Freaks, which has actual circus freaks from that era.
Talk about a cult movie.
That's a very big one. And Lucy Jones tells me that the director is from Kentucky, which was very cool. I didn't know that at the time. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's true. He's from Louisville.
Okay, cool. We have a Kentucky tie there, which is
great. Oh, yeah, big time. And then, like, if you're really trying to, if you're capable of mashing your entertainment all in together, I see that the cult opens at 6 tonight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then at 8 at Al's, Freddy Got Fingered is getting showed as a part of their cult film series.
Right.
And then you're all's after party.
We're a continuation of that night.
So if you just really want to hustle your hipness downtown, you can probably hit everything.
You got to fit it all in.
So, again, thanks to Sarah Brown and David Kring for coming down. David, do you want to hit us with one more sort of cult music track?
Yeah.
From that might have something to do with the show?
Yeah, this is from an iconic scene. in a Wes Anderson film, The Royal Tenenbaums.
Love that
Judy
movie.
Is a punk when they're kind of given an overview of Margot Tenenbaum's kind of life.
Oh, right.
Montage, they play this song.
My favorite line is when, one of my many favorite lines is when Margot's mom says, I didn't know you smoked.
Yeah.
And she's like,
yeah.
Well, I think you should stop.
Yeah. all right, yeah, Judy is a punk, the Ramones.
Okay, thanks you guys for coming down. We'll catch you tonight at the Parachute Factory.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Trivial Thursdays. We'll be back in just a few minutes. David Butler of Clean Power Planet's coming, and we'll be right back. So stick around. Keep it right here all the way to the left at 88.1 WRFL. Trivial Thursdays here on WRFL, and I'm your host, Mick. Happy to be with you every week here from 7 to 9 in the morning. We get to visit with some of the people who do cool, cool things in Lexington. Thanks to Sarah and David of the Parachute Factory for coming in and talking about tonight's opening of the Cult Art Show. We, let's see, what else can I tell you? It's September. It is September. I took care of things where September was concerned by playing Earth, Wind, and Fire earlier. I've got another song that was like high on my radar to play too. And as soon as we play that, I'm going to come back with David Butler. From Clean Power Planet, we're going to talk about solar energy and how things are progressing with that. So stick around for that. That's coming up right now. This is like, so there was this great album many, many years ago. There was a guy whose name I'm now forgetting. It'll come to me in a second, though. Hal Wilner was his name, Hal Wilner. And he put together these incredible, he sort of started the whole tribute album thing where people would, you know, you'd collect a bunch of artists who would do songs by some given icon. And one of his earliest ones was called Lost in the Stars, which was a tribute to Kurt Weill. Let me be very clear about this. I'm talking about the composer of the Knickerbocker, of Mac the Knife, and a variety of things from the 20s and 30s. Not Kurt Weill, the contemporary indie rock guy. So Kurt Weill, who wrote all these old songs, including one of them, including September Song. Let's see. So I want to play September Song. So the album, it featured, you know, covers by people of different sorts of things. And this, I've got this Lou Reed version of September Song that I just love. I think that even Lou Reed didn't like it that much because he wound up re-recording his solo version of it, in a more, somber sort of way. But what I love about this Lou Reed version, this version that came out originally on the Lost in the Stars compilation tribute to Kurt Weill, was the kind of upbeat nature of what is, you know, a kind of a maudlin song, the song called September Song. So, you know, I'll let you be the judge. This is Lou Reed with September Song. I'm here with David Butler, my buddy of Clean Power Planet, among other things, and a huge proponent of solar energy behind the sun, in front of the sun. We're all around the sun.
Under the sun.
Under the sun. Good morning, David.
How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Thanks for coming on the show. Good to see you.
Happy to be here.
I'm really excited and anxious to are we going to have solar energy yet? What's the deal?
I think we do have it a little bit. It's got a foothold anyway.
You've been involved in this solar, just if we can broad stroke things for just a second here. You've been involved in trying to sort of bring and popularize solar energy for quite some time. To me, solar energy is, and I think a lot of people feel this way too, it's just like, you know, I just think, come on, come on. At what point do we start to see a kind of critical mass for it just seems like the smartest thing. I know it does to you because you've been doing it for a while.
Well, I think we're already there in a lot of states.
Okay.
But, you know, Kentucky is a big, big coal state. So we have a little more inertia. It'll take us a little longer. But We have two major utilities in the state that are, you know, putting in really massive solar farms.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah, that's a pretty important development, I'd say.
Yeah. And that's happened in, has that happened within the last several years?
Last couple of years. Like right now, East Kentucky Power Cooperative has an application in to build a big solar farm that will have a community aspect where you can actually license a panel.
Okay.
You know, for your own personal electricity.
Well, so, and this, does this begin to address, you know, I don't know, a lot of times if you hear people push back against solar energy, what are the most common arguments that you hear people use?
Every time I talk to somebody about it here, they still say, oh, we don't have enough sunshine in Kentucky, which is absolutely not true, because Germany is one of the most massive solar countries in the world, and they have about as much sun as Alaska.
Right.
So we have like 60% more sun than that. We have plenty of sunshine.
Well, I was at Cave Run last week and at the state fair the week before that, and I can say that there's more sunshine than I cared for there to be when I was there.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I mean, I never actually would have thought of that. To me, the sun's up in the sky, so what's the problem?
I guess, you know, people feel it's too cloudy, or, you know, they just think you have to be in Arizona or whatever,
yeah.
And that's not the case.
So the when you talk about, did you use the term solar farm, or did I just make that up?
I did use that term. I'm not sure that's the right term,
yeah.
but anyway, the LG&E KU has a couple of big solar installations.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're getting ready to start a new one. East Kentucky Power Cooperative has an application in for one. So
what do they like literally look like? What is it? Not the application, but yeah. Like what is it? What do these things look like?
So it
does
would
it look
be
like the future? Does it look like a science fiction movie from the 70s?
I don't know about that, but just racks of, you know, poles sticking up out of the ground with these big long rows of solar panels that go on for acres and acres.
Okay. Now, I'd always heard that these panels are one of the arguments that I feel like I hear sometimes is they're like, well, no, it's just too expensive. Those panels, they cost too much, and they won't be able to pay for themselves in their lifespan or something like that.
Yeah, that's definitely not true anymore. Solar now, depending on the type of installation, is maybe like somewhere between $4 a watt installed and for utility scale, like closer to $2 a watt.
Mm-hmm.
For the capacity, and they, you know, they can pay for themselves in some cases under 10 years, depending on the tax incentives. But in a lot of cases, they would pay for themselves within 20 years. And sometimes you'll hear people say, you know, that's horrible. It takes 20 years for them to pay for themselves. And then they'll do a giant bathroom remodel with a huge tub, and they'll spend $20,000 on that. And that's never going to pay for itself.
Touche. I mean, yeah, really. So people spend lots of money on home renovation. What about I'm not sure how. So when we talk about Clean Power Planet, which we're going to and sort of are, which is that is your podcast.
Yeah.
Or is that also the business that you. Is Clean Power Planet the name of your business or the podcast or both?
Well, I have a regular good old day job.
Okay.
And so the podcast is not my business. It's just kind of a passion for me.
Yes.
But I have a project that has sort of sprung out of that. So the first episode of my podcast, maybe like a year and a half ago, I announced that I was going to do a fundraising like benefit concert to put solar panels on a low-income home.
Right.
I had no idea if I could do that. I thought there was a good chance I couldn't, I wanted to sort of...
You have to raise a pretty decent chunk of change to do it.
And I wanted to put it out there like as a dare to myself to say, you can't quit this podcast because you said you were going to do this. So about almost a year ago, Deanna McCord from the Kentucky Housing Corporation, which deals with energy efficiency and affordable housing.
Okay.
She had been listening to the podcast and she called me up and said, hey, we'd like to help you put on a benefit. And in fact, we'd like to do it across the state.
Okay.
And so they got Habitat for Humanity involved. And along the way, we've partnered with the Kentucky Student Environmental Coalition, Bluegrass Green Source, Kentucky Solar Energy Society. So we actually have our first two events coming up on October 8th.
Okay. And so, and what's that going to be like, or where is that going to be?
So one will be in Lexington at the Burl, and the other one will be in Louisville at Haymarket Whiskey Bar. So there'll okay. be fundraising concerts.
And these, in this case, this is to raise money to?
To put solar panels on Habitat homes.
Homes, plural.
Yeah. Well, hopefully our goal for the first year is one for each city.
Okay. So this is, so it remains, the challenges are like, I'm not sure how much you keep up with policy, with like solar energy policy on a, like a state government
yes,
level or something like
somewhat.
That.
Somewhat. I don't know if I can speak very accurately uh-huh. about it, but I can talk a little bit about the challenges we have.
Well, yeah, I mean, because what I'm thinking is, and I get this from, you know, I have a variety of guests that do cool things that, one of the things that I've noticed in hosting the show over the years and having guests is policymakers. Policy is hard for a lot of people to understand, and it's also hard for a lot of people to understand that policy takes a long time to, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't know whether it has to or not is sort of beside the point. It just does. Yeah. It takes a long time, but a lot of the people that make policy, they're kind of visionaries, actually. They're the people that are like, no, you're right, this needs to happen, it's going to take a while, but we're going to steer the ship in that general direction,
right?
And surely solar energy falls into that category where there's lots of people even in the coal industry or whatever, they're like, no, it does have to happen, and it's going to happen. So like, what have you seen in policy that sort of is optimistic, I guess, in terms of solar energy in Kentucky?
Well, I would say, you know, there are a lot of people that that have been going to the Capitol to lobby for better solar policies every single year for, I don't know, 10 years, maybe longer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those people are in the Kentucky Solar Energy Society. Some of them are affiliated with Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, and they'll pick a day and they'll all kind of descend on the Capitol and make appointments and go talk to legislators. And it seems like there are more and more legislators that are on board with opening things up for solar. You know, we're better off than some states. We do have a net metering program, but it has a really small cap. So it's not ideal for businesses or schools to take advantage of. It's kind of for homeowners.
So net metering, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of where you like sort of sell your energy back to the utility company. Is that what that is?
Not exactly. You offset your energy use. So you're producing more power than you're using
yes.
during the day when you're at work and your solar panels are running. And then at night, you're using more power. You know, you're using power and you're not producing any.
Okay.
So that kind of offsets your bill. What it doesn't allow you to do is sell extra power back to the utility. If you make more power than you consume, then that's awesome, but they won't pay you for it. So,
right. Yet.
Yeah.
Although, when you talk about like funds, I mean, you know, like credits or funds or whatever changing hands, on a certain level, if you get your bill offset by generating your own power, that's an interesting
huge.
Trade-off.
And, yeah, and that's how the, you know, it's really important to have that policy for sure. That's how the solar panels pay for themselves.
Right.
Because otherwise you'd have to have batteries, which would be expensive.
Well, see, that's the part I don't even understand sometimes. Like, you know, you collect energy from sunlight with solar panels. And then a miracle occurs and I plug in my vacuum cleaner and it works.
Yeah, it just for most systems, unless you're out in the woods in a cabin, most systems today just put electricity back onto the grid.
Okay.
And you're pulling electricity from the grid. You may never be using the exact same electrons that your solar panels.
Interesting.
Produced.
Okay, yeah.
But you know, maybe Elon Musk is going to change that if he can make batteries cheap enough.
Right. And you're not kidding at all, really.
No, I'm not.
Dave Butler is here from Clean Power Kentucky, the Clean Power Kentucky podcast. Is that right?
Clean Power Planet.
Clean Power Planet.
And the project is Solar Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah. Something you've been passionate about for, I'm going to say a decade, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. So, what are the things that you're excited about right now? You mentioned that there's this event coming up on October 8th.
Yeah.
And I know that you're pretty excited about that.
I am. So the Kentucky Solar Energy Society, every year they do solar tours in like 5 or 6 different cities.
I want to go.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
And for Lexington, we're meeting at the Plantery.
Okay.
And then we're going to have some installers that would be speaking. We'll meet at 10 a.m. on October 8th at the Plantery. Then we're going to take a bus ride around town to look at different solar systems with the installers who put them in so people can ask questions. And then we'll come back to the Plantery for refreshments and, you know, a little Q&A.
Okay.
And then later that night, we'll go to the Burl and we'll see Warren Byram and Western Movies and Slo-Fi and have a big old time and raise some money to put panels on a Habitat house.
That's fantastic. And so, and this is, I think, Lexington's newest venue at the Burl, which I haven't been to yet. With some of Lexington's most venerable and reliable entertainers.
That's right.
Warren and Chris Sullivan as Western Movies, I suppose.
Yeah,
and
then Otto Helmuth.
Okay, yeah. And then Otto with Slo-Fi and just really it's all our old buddies kind of, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
But all these people have been, they're as venerable to the music scene as... I was going to make some sort of reference to the sun. They've been around as long as the sun's been shining. Ooh, someone's going to hurt me. So let's see. Well, I'm really excited about the notion of a tour of houses.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been to too many with the exception of Dick Levine's house, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Amazing. I don't know. That's probably not on the tour.
It's not on the tour just because it's so far out.
Yeah.
But I hope to maybe set up an event just to go see that sometime soon.
Some people, and I've tried to get Dick, we've talked about Dick being on the radio, on the show before, because Dick is an incredible pioneer in this.
Absolutely.
Like nationally acknowledged, maybe internationally acknowledged, right?
Yeah, I think.
Is that right?
Internationally, I would say.
Yeah.
And he lives here in Kentucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, just right outside of Lexington, in a place that looks like it's from a 1970s science fiction movie.
Yeah. in a state where people think we don't have enough sun for solar.
Yeah. Now, let's see. So, why don't we take a quick little break? What time we got? 44. Yeah. Let's take a little break here and play a sun themed song. I think we can do that. And come back and visit with David Butler some more and hear some more about Clean Power Planet and the state of solar energy here in Kentucky. So I think we found a song we can agree upon. It's pretty easy, really. Anyway, so here's an old Beatles song that just seems sort of perfect, right? Gosh, what a beautiful song that is. I forget what a beautiful song that is.
It is.
From Abbey Road. Do you think that's a George song or?
I do not know.
It's called Sun King, and that's just certainly a lesser known Beatles song.
Yeah. Do you think it's named after Louis XIV?
It probably is because I guess David Butler did his homework today. I'm so proud. I'm so proud of you.
Today's the day that Louis XIV died. And I want to say he was the king of France for 72 years.
An incredibly long period of time for someone in that time, for any time really, but my God.
And the Sun King. He had the foresight to name his palace after Versailles, Kentucky. He didn't really know how to pronounce it.
Exactly, yeah.
He built it from his dad's hunting lodge. Added on to his dad's hunting lodge.
Louis, that's right. It's a nice place.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a shack before. A marble shack, but a shack nonetheless. Louis XIV, the Sun King, died on this day.
Yeah. Did you know he was from the House of Bourbon?
Every now and then, I was reminded often by my seventh grade French teacher, Mrs. Kessler, who deified Louis XIV almost as much as he deified himself.
Really?
Just because it was a French thing. I've been to Versailles in France.
That's awesome.
Versailles, that's something like that. I don't know. Yeah. Well done on the trivia homework for today.
Thanks.
David Butler is here from Clean Power Planet. And we're talking about, I'd say coming in right behind the metric system is solar energy. Is one of those things that I've been hearing my entire life was, just imminent.
Yeah.
And, never mind the metric system. I don't care if we do that or not.
Right.
Let's do solar as great guns as possible. And so I think one of the things that comes up, from a personal selfish curiosity standpoint, but I think a lot of people wonder too, is like, how can I have solar energy? How can I have solar on my house, and how do we figure out how people can, install solar stuff on their house?
Well, the best possible thing you could do would be to come to the solar tour on October 8th and talk to the installers and some homeowners that have put it on.
Yes.
And, they'll tell you what it was like to have it installed and how it's paying for itself and how much they like it.
Right. And then another good thing probably would be to participate in call your congressman on some level. I'm not sure what the exact message points are.
If you want to, if you want to get really involved, well, there are two things you could do. You could go to solarkentucky.org and volunteer to help us put on these benefits because we want to put solar on low-income homes in lots of different cities. We'll have events coming up in Berea, Elizabethtown, and Bowling Green over the next several months. October 8th, we're in Lexington and Louisville. But you can also join the Kentucky Solar Energy Society. So that's at kyses.org.
And so what do they do? I mean, like, some of this is sort of abstract to me in terms of, like, you've got this podcast called Clean Power Planet. Then there's, like you said, the Kentucky Solar Energy Society.
Right.
There's a number of kind of, affiliated organizations that I assume are approaching solar energy in Kentucky from a number of different perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Solar Energy Society, they have an educational mission. Mm-hmm. So they try to teach people that, solar is a feasible thing today. It's a lot cheaper than you think it is. Like in the last couple of years, the price of residential solar has gone down like another 5%.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps dropping and dropping and dropping.
This is like basic supply and demand sort of
Absolutely.
Stuff, right? So anybody that says, well, it's just too expensive.
In a lot of states, it's already on par with, building a new gas electric plant.
Mm-hmm.
So utilities are, they're not building fossil fuel plants anymore in a lot of states. A lot of the new electric capacity in the U.S. is solar.
Okay. That's good news.
Yeah.
Let's see. What is the most, what's something that you see happening that's exciting to you? Maybe on the state of Kentucky level.
Yeah. I would say having the major utilities go ahead and build significant, solar installations, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, even though, our legislature is kind of dragging its feet on the Clean Power Plan, the utilities know it's coming.
And right.
So they're, they're trying to be proactive. And I think that's definitely a move in the right direction.
Right.
We have a long way to go, of course. A tiny percent of our electricity in Kentucky comes from solar right now, but that's changing.
And it takes a little while to kind of correct course, if you will. I always think of a ship and like how it, you have to, but you know, granted, this is, we've been, you guys, a variety of people have been pushing for solar for, you know, a long time.
Absolutely.
It's basically, hopefully, the cry for solar, the call for solar is becoming louder and louder and louder. Yeah. And the arguments against it, hopefully, are getting diminished more and more. So let's see. David Butler's here from Clean Power Planet. And you guys are so you started out with the idea of sponsoring or somehow raising the money for a public housing project house.
Yeah.
To be clad, to be powered by solar energy. And that's turned into a little bit more than that.
Yeah. So it's a big project, and, you know, I do have a regular job, and so I'm not getting very much sleep at the moment, but it's a lot of fun planning it, and have a lot of great people and organizations that are involved. It's not just me, for sure.
Yeah. Now, so if people want to find out more about the what's the event called on the 8th? On
Solar Kentucky.
Okay.
And the website is solarkentucky.org, or you can go to facebook.com/solarkentucky.
Mm-hmm. And so, and this is on October 8th, right?
October 8th, okay. Yeah, in Lexington and Louisville.
Right, okay.
So it'll be hard for me to be in two places at once.
But by the power of solar energy. well, awesome. So what do you... let's see. It's about time for us to get out of here, I guess. But all right. If people want to find out more.
Yeah. Go to solarkentucky.org. You can sign up for the newsletter. Maybe I should just mention the bands that will be there in Louisville.
Oh, yeah,
because
please.
One of them is a hometown Lexington hero. Johnny Conqueror is playing the Louisville
In Louisville?
Show. Yeah.
Okay.
And Bendigo Fletcher and Voodoo Economics, which are Louisville bands. And that's at Haymarket Whiskey Bar, which is a cool little club.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So,
and you know, none of this would be possible without Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah.
Kind of picking the homes and figuring out how we can get panels installed and working with the families. That's really the biggest part. So,
wouldn't it be incredible if that became just part of the normal Habitat for Humanity plan?
Yeah, and
they're
all about energy efficiency on their homes because mm-hmm. they want it to be inexpensive for the families that move into the homes, you know, mm-hmm. to help make them successful. And so really the real work starts after the benefit show.
Right. Well, and the show and the day hopefully will raise people's interest, excitement and education level where solar energy is concerned.
Yeah, and it'll be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, David Butler, thank you so much for coming and talking about solar energy in Kentucky. And, you know, one more plug for your podcast.
All right.
Which you're not doing right now. Right. Did you tell me you've been so busy that...
Yeah, well, it's on a little bit of a hiatus, but I'm going to get that rolling mm-hmm. in the last few weeks before we come up to the event. And that's cleanpowerplanet.com.
Right.
Yeah,
and so that's a good way to keep up probably with, especially if you're a podcast fan, with the sort of broad strokes of solar energy. And so, because sometimes things like this can seem abstract or unapproachable to, you know, lots of people like me. I'm just like, solar energy is great. And it's, how do you do it? I don't know.
Yeah. And I interview somebody that works in renewable energy for every show.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a chance for me to learn as I'm going.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of fantastic sort of selfish way to go up and ask for instance, the president of the International Solar Energy Society, if I can just ask him questions for 30 minutes. Uh-huh. You know? So it's a great way to do that.
I love it. Dave Butler, thanks for coming on the show. That's about it for Trivial Thursday. So we've got Around the Corner is Democracy Now. There's time for one more sun-powered song,
awesome.
Right? Which we were reflecting together on whether or not Fishbone ever played at your one-time club, the Rockledge, but we're both too old to remember whether
they
did or
not. I think they did, but
So, that having been said, I got to leave you with some Fishbone. So, that's it for Trivial Thursdays from their album, The Reality of My Surroundings. This is Everyday Sunshine. Have a great day. We'll see you next time.